Jesus meets us today dressed in summer attire. Water, wind, boats, mountain, crowds, quiet, waves, sea. These are the forms of raiment he wears coming toward us this morning out of the unforeseen, out of the future. He has sent the crowds away. He has ordered the 12 into a boat with a destination given on the other side. He has gone up, gone out, gone away onto the mountain to pray. Day came, and then evening, morning, and then night, and he was there on the mountain alone. Soon there will be much and more work to do. The wind will come up, the team will be afraid, the waves will rise, and he will be called out at the fourth watch of the night. That's late at night, the wee hours, dark 30. And all of this will arise, we are taught in the scripture, as an invitation to faith, ye of little faith. Just for now, though, just for a minute, there is a clean summer wind blowing across the top of the mountain whence Jesus bids us come. One year, some miles west of here, within a time and space of joyful ministry, we passed a year in which snow fell on every major holiday and Sunday. Snow fell on Halloween, snow fell on Thanksgiving, snow fell on Christmas Sunday, and on Christmas, and on New Year's, and on Groundhog Day, and on Palm Sunday, and on Easter. To top it all off, snow also fell on Mother's Day. In our region, when summer comes, we recognize a different, necessarily different season, a fallow time. Howard Thurman, by the report from Oregon and email this last year, once gave a sermon with this title, Fear Not the Fallow. We find no record of it, nor need we one. The title tells it all. There are full times with much snow, and there are fallow times wherein we are restored free from snow. These fallow times, mountain, lake, breeze, quiet, faith times, we need not fear. In the summer in the north, we often gather for family reunions. Here we are connected vertically by generation and time rather than horizontally by work and space. You may have some reason for caution or anxiety heading for such a party. Our families of origin bear within them difficult memories, hard words spoken, past hurts, settled, negatively settled relationships. Yet in the fallow time, we go to the place where, when you have to go there, they have to take you. Fear not the fallow. You may there discover someone, something, a story, a memory, a great uncle, a gift, which could only come your way in a quieter mode, up a mountain, apart from the economics of work and the rest of life. In the summer in the north, we may have more time for friendship. If we are forever fiddling with the latest BlackBerry or other quasi-communication, as is now part of our technological turf, we may be uncertain, even anxious, with the quieter rhythms of friendship, listening, more listening, speaking, quiet. Fear not. Our friends give us back our real selves, our own best selves. They both require and deserve our undivided attention come summer. In the summer up here in the north, we too may take to the high mountain. It is the attention, the mind, once freed, which illumines the natural world. The monarch butterfly is always there in season. In the quiet, with enough warmth to get around and to watch and to look, we of a sudden may be able to appreciate the miraculous wonder of the created order. Fear not the fallow. It is the forecourt of prayer. In the summer in the north, we may find the idler rhythms, the fallow mode, if we can shake off the natural fear of a different way, a different habit, travel, exercise, reading, devotion, silence. Our being, our human being is not fully exhausted, though we may be, by our fretful and grasping construction and expenditure, the getting and spending by which we lay waste our powers. An hour a day a week a quarter a year every seven. These are not time seasons meant only for a few. They are for you. We are human beings, not human doings. Fear not the fallow. From this pulpit in this summer, we have prayerfully paused to listen for the gospel under the theme of evangelism in the liberal tradition, South, North, Youth. From Kentucky, Reverend Wade brought us deeply to consider faith in the binding of Isaac and the Ethiopian eunuch. From New England, Reverend Garner and Reverend Thomas announced with us the goodness of God and the presence of God. And next week and the following, Reverend Olson will bring us her wisdom regarding the gospel and young adults. Voices, South North Youth, ask us to consider, come this season, the grace of invitation. Jesus, by the record of St. Matthew, went up on the mountain by himself to pray. By himself, he invites us to join him, as Frost wrote, "I'm going out to clean the pasture spring. I'll only stop to rake the leaves away and wait to watch the water clear I may. I shan't be gone long. You come, too." We pause by the table of grace with bread and cup prepared. A natural, urgent, objection, opposition, response may arise as we see Jesus in summer attire. You may wonder, what of our sisters and brothers near and far, for whom the fallow is the fullest time there is? What of those who are waiting without idols but without fruit for a harvest time, a mourning time, a full time, a work time? Here is a man whose day every day is fallow. He watches from a hospital bed, blank-eyed. Here is a woman who has known the power and happiness of real work. She again scans the screen, the paper, the mail, the news, looking for a place to invest her real gifts. Here is a couple who have much in memory to share, much in life earned wisdom to share, and not nary one, not a visitor, week by week. My grandmother had a sign on her kitchen door. "Do you know who I'd like to cook a big chicken and dumpling dinner for? Anybody." Those who can remember can help those who are learning to remember. Again, Frost, when to the heart of man was it ever less than a treason to go with the drift of things, to yield with a grace to reason, to bow and accept the end of a love or a season? Look about you. 14 million Americans who are looking for work are not finding work. The income of the top 1% of the population exceeds that of the bottom 50%. Average household wealth for Caucasian families is 20 times that of families of color. We may lack to some degree the pastoral or personal imagination such a time requires. We may need films and novels and books which will quicken the heart in an appreciation for what such a fearsome, fallow time can mean. Do we remember what it feels like to be left out? We need an Uncle Tom's Cabin of unemployment and a Harriet Beecher Stowe of loss of work. We need a Grapes of Wrath of unemployment and a John Steinbeck of loss of work. We need an Ironweed of current unemployment and a William Kennedy of loss of work. We need a Cesar Chavez of unemployment and a workers' movement for loss of work. For those who have not been vocationally excluded, those who have jobs and who have good minds and hearts, we need a rhetoric which will touch the heart, open the heart, warm the heart, change the heart, and move the heart. Can you remember what it feels like, what it is like, to lack what others have and to want it badly? In meditating on today's gospel, the figure of sinking Peter brought a memory. You know that Peter means rock. Usually we think of this as a reference to his foundational strength in the building of the church. In this passage, as he goes underwater, his name perhaps has more direct reference to his sinking qualities, sink like a rock. For some years, I taught swimming and ran a waterfront at a church camp along the shores of a most beautiful lake. Those years and the men and women I met there caused me to go to seminary. It was not what they knew or what they professed or what they did even that drew me. It was the way they lived in freedom and love. I pray that here, year by year, somehow others will see in you and me such freedom and such love. I looked this week at a now very worn book of worship, a gift from one such soul who inscribed to Bob the lifeguard, "First you saved lives, now you'll save souls. God bless you." There are some gifts that last a lifetime. On that waterfront in those summer years, we had one firm rule: no drowning, prohibited. Drowning, prohibited. Yet, with the right preparation, you really should not have any drownings, that is. Anyway, which thankfully we did not. But occasionally we had to dive in after somebody. One of the most poignant, frightening, and repeated instances occurred, you will think this odd, during the swimming tests. Young teenagers had to show that they could swim 50 yards and tread water in order to pass the swim test and swim in the deep water. Most did fine. But every now and then, a 14-year-old who did not know how to swim and who did not want to admit it, but who did not want to be left out and who did not want to be seen as different, would get in line and stay in line, and then, I guess, hoping for who knows what, would jump in and begin to sink. They just did not want to be left out. In the eyeglass of memory, I look at those young people. Can you remember what it feels like to be left out? Can you remember what it feels like to lack what others have and to want it so badly that you will? Can we remember in a few weeks come autumn what it feels like to have the young heart of a teenage woman or man? And today, can we gain a little measure of sympathy for the 9% of the population looking for but not finding work? Our gospel commends faith as the antidote for fear. Humans do not easily walk on water, as Peter the Rock reminds us. My own experience with gravity is not unlike your own. Rocks rolling down the hill go all the way, consistently. Cars on ice slide downhill, consistently. Boat hoist wheels once loosed and holding the boat spin uncontrollably, consistently. Swimmers who do not know the prone float sink, consistently. Matthew 14 was not written to erase the need for a swim test. Granted that we are not ever in a position to say what God can and cannot do, our experience with gravity holds. So too, our need for faith. So too, our need to face the fallow. Fear not the fallow. Why do we fear to face the fallow? Is it that we are uncomfortable with silence, solitude, quiet, lack, with anything that interrupts the 24/7, 365 din of information falling like a not-so-gentle rain upon us? The fallow is meant as a season, not a permanent condition. It is meant as Sabbath, preparation, restoration, reinvigoration, as the balance that provides a living critique of our idolatry of work. The fallow is meant not to last, but to lean upon us, to shift our body weight, to raise a question. In the summer, I pass daily a farm still operated 40 years later by an elementary school friend. We were caused, he and I, one year to perform a stage version of Tom Sawyer's playful entrapment of Huck Finn along the fence. Do you remember this typically Twain send-up of a certain form of idolatry? Tom is told to paint the fence. He begins when up comes Huck, who is curious. Oh, Tom couldn't possibly give up the joy of work. He couldn't possibly give up the joy of such a job. The more he smiles, the more intrigued Huck becomes. Finally, Tom relents and says he will graciously allow Huck to paint the fence for him, which delights Huck. Only, Tom finishes, Huck will have to pay for the privilege of the work. He has only an apple to his name, which Tom seizes as he departs. How deeply have we thought about just how much we adore work? Has Twain's story sunk in? It should. Work is crucial, especially for those who lack it. Work is perilous, especially for those who cannot see its limits. Man does not live by bread alone. Bread alone will never bring us to terms with life or death, with loss or betrayal, with choice or failure, with sin or death, or the threat of meaninglessness. More, bread alone will not ever help us set the theological dial tones, the theological balances by which we live and die. How much creation? How much fall? How much grace? How much sin? How much freedom? How much constraint? How much divine? How much human? How much mind? How much heart? And in today's encounter with Jesus, how much full-time and how much fallow? How much work and how much prayer? We need not fear the fallow. If we face the fallow and fix the limits of the fallow with a measure of personal empathy, of sympathy for those for whom the fallow is all they have. A measure of faith may help. To move from fear to faith means learning how to float. You know, sometimes after failing the swim test and through the rest of the week, a young person at that summer camp would come in the morning for lessons to learn to swim. The difference between sinking and swimming is floating. To float is to learn to trust that the same water in life that can sorely threaten you will also hold you up. No analogy is perfect. But the trust that allows one to float, to learn the prone float, is like the trust that keeps one afloat in life and moves one from fear to faith. All the lessons and all the strokes come much later. First, there comes a moment when you stretch out your arms and lie down face in the water and wait for your feet to rise behind you. You see? When you see that moment, there is nothing sweeter. You can float. You have faith. The water will hold you up. We are in good hands, and so it behooves us to bear one another's burdens, as Houston Smith once said. We may thereto find a way to mark out a new way of living, perhaps not quite walking on water, but one that carries us forward by faith in one who still does calm the sea and still the water. Then our fullness will be fallow and our fallow full, so frost again. Yield who will to their separation. My object in living is to unite my vocation with my avocation, as my two eyes make one in sight. Only where love and need are one, and the work is play for mortal stakes, is the deed ever really done for heaven and the future's sakes. A long time ago, in a borrowed upper room, a gathering of very human beings was fed by one they came to know as Son of God. What they were fed gave them the courage to face the full and the empty, and especially the faith, may it be ours today, to fear not the fallow. Amen.